Hello, it's me, Lily, a frog. I live in a pond, and I love to tell stories. Theseus and the Minotaur is an ancient Greek myth. It's at least 3,000 years old. 3,000 years old! Isn't it just really beautiful that a story can be told for generations and generations until it is thousands and thousands of years old, and still, just now, I'm telling it to you, and maybe someday you'll tell it to someone else? I think so. It goes like this. On the island of Crete, where the sun shines hot and the sea sparkles with waters so blue they make the sky jealous of their blueness, the gods fought and snored and played and danced, ate, drank, and didn't behave well at all. They were a lot like toddlers, really, because they were terribly beautiful, with pouty lips and trembling curls and cheeks somehow more kissable than the cheeks of mere mortals. And like toddlers, they hadn't been to play school or kindergarten, and they hadn't learned the important things you learn there, such as play nice, share your things, put things back how you found them or in a better spot, say please and thank you, and of course, never hit anyone or trick somebody by shape-shifting. If you do, say you're sorry and you don't do it again. One such Greek demigod of ancient times was named Theseus, and he was on a mission to slay a terrible, drooling, wicked, horrible, awful monster. The monster lived in the palace of King Minos. Theseus's father had made a deal with the powerful and terrible King Minos, whose amazing palace had everything in it. There was a swimming pool, a chocolate fountain, a ballroom for dancing, a ballroom that was just like a really big room full of lots of different types of balls, beautiful gardens full of elaborate topiary shrubs and roses, an ice skating rink, elaborate closets full of elegant clothing, anything you'd want to wear. An army so strong and fearsome that every island, nation, and city within its reach was terrified of it. Several halls for feasting. An Orange Julius. An arts and crafts room, of course. A room with a climbing wall. A room with a waterfall and hot pools. A room just for wrapping gifts, a room made entirely out of Lego with Lego furniture and drawers and cabinets full of Lego, several libraries, several gymnasiums, several amphitheaters, many sleeping chambers with fur and silk-lined beds, a menagerie, which is like a zoo, with only beautiful and amazing pets in it, several rooms just for gazing at expensive art, oh, and also a labyrinth, which is just like a maze, but full size, so that a person can walk around in it and either get hopelessly lost or find their way out. And at the center of that labyrinth, the terrible, drooling, wicked, awful monster with hooves, with horns, the Minotaur. King Minos loved the monster, though nobody knew why, and the deal he struck with Theseus's father, King Aegeus, king of Athens, was that his city would have to supply Minos with 7 boys and 7 girls for his monster to eat each year. The poor darlings would be taken to the beautiful palace, be forced to enter the terrifying labyrinth, which was as big as a junior high school, and while technically they had a chance of finding their way out of the maze instead of to the center of the labyrinth where the dreadful monster would gobble them up, none ever emerged. In exchange for these young people's lives, King Minos promised to never attack with his mighty army, the city of Athens, where Theseus and his father, King Aegeus, lived, so that except for the certain loss of 14 teenagers per year, they were safe and at a sort of peace, even though their army was much weaker than King Minos's. The people of Athens, the Athenians, hated to send their young, beautiful people to the terrible fate of facing the Minotaur at the heart of the labyrinth, but they knew they just couldn't outpower King Minos's army. There was only one way they could conceive of to put an end to the terrible bargain. Though it was a long shot, oh boy, it was if one of the young people were to defeat the Minotaur. Well, Theseus vowed he would do it. He knew, he had always known, that he was destined to be an epic hero. Theseus trained every day and every night for the task from the time he was a young boy of just 5 years old. He did martial arts training. He studied sword fighting. He played chess, solved Rubik's cubes with his eyes closed, and untangled knotted kite strings. He ran 10 miles each day and drank avocado and spinach smoothies. He practiced alchemy and spellcasting. He learned the arts of rhetoric and oration. He danced, wrestled, and did calisthenics. He did burpees, crunches, and belly dancing. He took flute lessons, practiced solving riddles, and trained in archery, fire eating, and throwing knives. Finally, when he was 11 years old, the gods mature more quickly than us see. He was ready. But was his father ready to send him to Crete to battle the Minotaur? No, his father was so afraid he'd lose his beautiful son to the terrible Minotaur that he sobbed all the night before Theseus set sail to Crete. But Theseus promised to return, hadn't he? When the youth set sail to face their fate in the labyrinth each year, they'd sail in a beautiful boat made just for the purpose, which was all festooned with black silk and fitted with billowing black sails. But Theseus had a white sail made just for his return home, and he told his father to watch for it when the boat returned over the seas, back home again. The white sail would mean that Theseus was victorious and the Minotaur defeated. So the lovely ship with the black sails and the frightened youth set sail for Minos's castle, where they were fed a delicious last supper, and they were sung to by beautiful minstrels with soothing instruments all night long. But in the morning, they were forced into the labyrinth. "Don't fear," Theseus told them, "I am your hero. Wait here without wandering into the heart of the labyrinth until I return to tell you I have slain the Minotaur. Then we can all return home where we, well, especially me, will be lauded as heroes." Theseus made his way straight to the heart of the labyrinth, where he wrestled the Minotaur to the ground after confusing him with a Rubik's cube, belly dancing him into a corner, and orating one of Zeus's all-time greatest speeches. Then he cut off the monster's head. He was ready to return home a hero after rescuing the other youths trapped in the maze. There was just one problem. The labyrinth was so big and so complex that Theseus couldn't find his way out. It was so easy to find his way to the center, but where was the exit? Why? Why did he spend so much time studying how to find and slay monsters and not on how to get out of labyrinths? He began to weaken in frustration, confusion, hunger, thirst. He discovered he'd been traveling in circles. How long had he been trapped in that cruel, dizzying maze? Just when he was ready to abandon all hope, a princess dropped down from above on a strong silk thread. She told him her name was Ariadne, that she was the evil King Minos's daughter, and that she was terribly, desperately in love with Theseus, especially his trembling curls, his pouting lips, and the heroic figure he cut, dragging the monster's head after him. "Marry me," she demanded, "and I will rescue from this labyrinth. I've been scuttling through this little maze since I was a tiny tot, and I alone know the way out. All I ask in return is that you take me with you. Take me away from here. This palace has everything a girl could ever hope for. Fine dining, beautiful baths and dressing rooms, tennis courts. But except for one thing, my father is a tyrant, and he does terrible things like feed teenagers from Athens to his pet monster. Why doesn't he just feed it hay? Do you promise?" "Yes," said Theseus, though perhaps somewhat unconvincingly. If Ariadne would have been a bit more observant, she might have noticed that every time she shapeshifted from a girl to a spider, as was her habit, and a really useful skill because she could drop silk threads behind her and climb up marble walls with her long, hairy 8 legs. Well, she might have noticed Theseus shuddering because, heroic as he was terrified of spiders. But she didn't notice. She wrapped spider silk around his waist and she pulled her darling through the labyrinth. When they returned to the entrance, which was completely unguarded because nobody expected the youths to emerge again, as none had ever before. Ariadne and Theseus rescued the other young Athenians, and they all scrambled back down the cliffs to their waiting ship, where they set sail back home as quickly as possible. As the salty Mediterranean breeze filled the ship's sails and tousled Theseus's perfect hair just so, Ariadne gazed lovingly at him and exclaimed, "I just can't wait to marry you, Theseus." Then she began talking about how she'd like to plan their wedding, and she got so excited that her mandibles began to click together. "Well, I'm not sure I should get married," said Theseus. "After all, I'm only 11. "But the gods mature more quickly than regular people," she insisted. As the ship drew nearer and nearer to the shores of Athens, Theseus began to panic. All he could think about was ways to outsmart Ariadne so that he wouldn't have to marry her. Finally, he convinced her to stop on an island with him for a picnic, where he cast a sleeping spell on her. When she was fast asleep, he jumped into the boat and took off, leaving her gently snoring on the shores without a boat in sight to follow them home with. How glad he was to be returning home a hero. How glad he was that he spent so many years training and practicing things like spell casting. What a smart Greek demigod he was. Oh, Theseus. Poor Theseus. If only he kept the promises he made. If only, instead of practicing heroic poses on the way home, he'd remembered that he told his father he'd change the color of his ship's sail to white if he was victorious. When King Aegeus saw the boat returning to the shore with its black sails still hoisted, he was sure his beautiful son was dead, and he flung himself off the cliffs into the sea, which is still to this day called the Aegean Sea for that very reason. Oh, gods and demigods of ancient Greece, the morals of this story are so many. I mean, overreact much, King Aegeus? Gosh, wait and talk to someone who knows the full story before flinging yourself off anything or anywhere. And Ariadne, use shape-shifting sparingly. It so rarely works out for anyone in the myths and stories of yore. But perhaps even more importantly, you can't make anyone love you. It just doesn't work like that. And Theseus, when you make a promise, keep it. No matter how amazingly epic you are, your word should still be your bond. This version of Theseus and the Minotaur has been rearranged and retold by Marlene Werfel. Tales from the Lilypad stories will always be free for podcast listeners. Stories are gifts. This one is a gift from all the people who've been telling it for thousands of years. But if you can do me a favor, please write a review of Tales from the Lilypad at the iTunes store. If you can't, thanks for listening.